it's not that we're trying to be egoistic or we want to show off that we have what it takes. But sometimes it's human to, you know, you want to do the best that you can, because I'm not putting so much pressure on myself. I just want to make really nice music. I think that's the positive way of thinking about competition, in any competition.
Hey there, welcome to the Conductors Podcast. I'm your host, Chawen Ting, a conductor with over 20 years of experience working with professional symphony orchestras, opera houses, new music groups, and vocalists. I'm also founder of Girls Who Conduct and have mentored hundreds of conductors from across the globe. I created the Conductors Podcast to share all the behind-the-scenes secrets with you while I interview conductors, musicians, and business gurus from around the world. This is a space created for conductors, conducting students, musicians, and non-musicians who are curious and interested in learning more about the profession, craft, industry, and business. Shy away from the real talk? No way. Money, hardship, growth, and the roller coaster of a conducting career are all topics we discuss here. I will give you simple, actionable, step-by-step strategies to help you take action on your big dream, move through the fear that's holding you back, and have a real impact. Now, pull up a seat, make sure you're cozy, and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. Hi there, welcome to episode number 10 of the Conductors Podcast. I'm your host, Chawen Ting, and I'm thrilled that you're tuning in with me at the 10th episode of the podcast. What an achievement, and I'm so glad I have you with me along the way. Just yesterday, I found out that the podcast audience comes from 19 different countries. Can you guess which 19s they are? And even more, can you do me a favor of introducing this podcast to someone from a different country that you might think would benefit from listening to it? Today, we are going to discuss a sensitive yet somehow controversial topic, music competitions. Composer Béla Bartók's famous quote says, "Competitions are for horses, not artists." However, some of us, including myself, dream about winning a major competition and then have a career that takes off all the time. Professional ensembles, especially orchestras, agents, or businesses continue to organize conducting competitions, and we continue to enter them because we are seeing people successful through this route. However, we are not seeing those who won a competition without a major career, not to mention those who tried, also worked hard, perhaps equally talented or qualified, but didn't win the glory. We only see the sparkling part of the business. With the pressing call for more diversity in the conducting field, La Maestra was the first conducting competition for women only, which was held in March 2021 in Paris amongst COVID-19. My guest today is the winner of the inaugural La Maestra competition, Rebecca Tone, and she will share her journey before, during, and after the competition with all of us. Rebecca is resident conductor of Jakarta Sinfonia Orchestra and is artistic director and music director of Ensemble Contemporary. She recently completed her two-year tenure as junior fellow in conducting at the Royal North College of Music, RNCM, and previously studied at the Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, CCM. During her studies, Rebecca worked extensively in assisting the BBC Philharmonic and the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, and frequently collaborates with Manchester Camerata. This 2021 season features debuts with Orchestre de Bahi, Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, Philharmonia Orchestra, BBC Philharmonic Orchestra, Oberhag Orchestre National Montpellier Occitanie, and Paris Mozart Orchestra.
Welcome, Rebecca. I'm so thrilled to welcome you to the show, and I can't wait for you to share your story and experience with my audience. So before we get started, though, will you give everybody a brief intro, just a little bit about your background and how you get to where you are right now?
Hi, I just want to say thank you so much for having me today. And a little bit about my background. I originally born and grew up in Indonesia, and I studied classical music, like instruments like piano and violin, since I was little, because my parents really love classical music, and they sent me to the U.S. For my undergrad as music, and I graduated music history, actually, because I realized I don't want to do a performance, and I decided to become a conductor when I was in the undergrad. But as we all know, I think in the U.S. they don't have undergrad degree for conducting, so I kind of like made up my own concentration. But then afterwards, I go back to Jakarta. I was an assistant conductor for 3 years and decided to pursue my career and master of music and orchestra conducting in Cincinnati. And from there, I went to the UK and became a junior fellow in conducting. And surprisingly, I won the Lammeister competition, and here we are.
Congratulations. I know this is like a belated congratulations, but it was really wonderful. And I wanted to jump back a little bit because a lot of people are eager to know how you find opportunities for yourself, mm-hmm. right? And then, of course, we know with COVID, it's a lot harder than before. But as you said, you kind of created opportunities for yourself since you were an undergrad. And how did that connection happen that you, after studying, you just went back home and become the assistant conductor with the orchestra?
So while I was studying my conducting as an undergrad, in my bachelor degree years, I didn't tell my parents about it because I was trying to figure it out. Is this something that I would like to do for the rest of my life, or, you know, for the next couple of years? And at the same time, my father, who's a pastor, but he also loves classical music, he was doing a really big project of... So in the same complex of our church, we also have a cultural mandate. So there's a huge concert hall being built. He designed the concert hall himself and had some wow. supporters to really support and give donations to fund the building. And then at the same time, he also tried to create an orchestra. So that's how the orchestra was founded. And but when I came back, and he said, why don't you help out with the orchestra? And that's how I became the assistant conductor for 3 years.
That's really cool. Like having a parent kind of just really supporting you. And he started the orchestra without knowing that you were into conducting, right? He just loved. Yeah, that's amazing.
It's funny because when you know, there's people like rumor that, oh, he created it for me, but honestly, like, he didn't know that I was going to conducting, and I didn't quite know that he was trying to create the orchestra at that time. We knew kind of like when a couple months before I mm-hmm. went back to Indonesia. So it's not something that he was doing it for me, but that's like some rumor, like saying like, oh, he's building it for like his kids, and like it's not true at all, which is kind yeah. of funny for me. And as we all know, it's interesting with Asian parents that they never try to push me into, like, you know, economics or medicine. Or when I tried to go to graphic design or some other field, they actually like, why don't you try out your music career, because you've been into it for so long, you know. They actually support me really for music, which is quite interesting, I think.
Extraordinary. So. I know as a parent, sometimes we have our thinking of how our kids will become. But I love that story of your parents just like supporting you 100%.
Yeah, it's great. It's wonderful.
So as you say, like kind of that winning the Maestra competition was kind of like a big turning point for your career. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the competition? Was that your first big competition?
It is my first big competition. It's not my first competition in general, because as we all know, fighting for any position is already a competition. Like, for example, like you're auditioning for an assistant position in a major orchestra in the U.S. is already a competition by itself, because you're competing with, you know, five other candidates or three other candidates or how many they invited for the final round. But this is the first big competition for me, yes. And it's interesting because I didn't expect to win at all. When I went to the competition, all I was thinking was, I haven't conducted or make music for 7 months. I almost didn't go because at that time in mm-hmm. Paris especially, the spike was very high for COVID. I almost didn't go. Like, my parent was like, just be careful. I don't know if you're like, just think about it, you know. There might be other opportunities. But then at that time, I was really craving for making music. So I went. I didn't bring my concert suit because, again, I wasn't expecting to win. I just wanted to like work with mm-hmm. the French orchestra, just to be in the Philharmonie and, like, you know, just to meet people, because there are, like, I think, like, four or five people that I know from the candidacy. So I was like, it's going to be good just to meet with them again after so long. Luckily enough, they did tell us that they're going to interview us. So that's why I brought like some jackets with me. Maybe that's why I'm thriving through the rounds, because I didn't put so much pressure on myself. I think that's the one biggest obstacle for me, when I put so much pressure on, like, I have to show them, like, I can do it, you know. Then it hinders the music making. It's not that we're trying to be egoistic or we want to show off that we have what it takes. But sometimes it's human to, you know, you want to do the best that you can. But I think that's why, because I'm not putting so much pressure on myself, all I can think was, I just want to make really nice music, and I just want to have experience, you know, to meet friends and, like, to make some connections with people again. I think that's the positive way of thinking about competition, in any competition.
Yeah, and I know this is so hard as we're talking about this, because as you said, even going to a graduate program, it's a kind of competition. You're competing with others to get in for your junior fellowship, for example. So it's sometimes really hard to wrap your head around, okay, I need to focus on making great music as opposed to I want to win the position. But it's just like a mind game.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a mind game, yeah.
So I was wondering, like you said, the competition was held during COVID, kind of when COVID was starting to spread in Europe. Did you have any objections when you applied for the competition? Because it's really like a first major competition just for women. And a lot of people had different thoughts or opinions on something only for one gender. Did you have any objections? Yeah. Like, did you wonder if you should apply, if you should do it because it had this label?
That's interesting. To be honest, when we're talking about opportunities for myself, like all of us, and we can all testify to this, we all try to apply for any opportunities we can. And some of the competition, to be honest, I was too old. So yeah. When La Maestra opened, and I'm like, oh, I can still apply because they don't have age limit, which is great.
I totally agree. I think the age limit is insane. It's like once you pass a certain age, you are not eligible anymore. Sometimes even for master classes, that you're not teachable in a sense that you graduated, you can't be learning or from the experience anymore.
Yeah, and I think it's maybe that's not because their thing that is not teachable, but I feel like they're, and it's getting younger and younger now. Like they're trying to find a music director that's like 20, 23 years old. They want to, who's the next Dumel or who's the next Klaus Makela, for example. But I know there's some conductors that they didn't do certain symphonies until they're very old, or quote unquote, we call it old now. But I think it comes with maturity of the score, and it doesn't mean that there's a certain burden that all conductors need to know, like all young conductors need to know everything. And I don't think it's right, because we need time. Everybody needs time to go through everything. And it's the same with learning instrument, isn't it? Like, you don't want somebody to learn the violin for 2 years and then suddenly like, hey, have you played like 10 concertos? I'm like, no, I've just learned it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same with conducting. Like, I don't know why they expect us to, like, how can you not know, or you can't conduct like Mahler 5 by you're like 25, you know? If somebody already knows everything by they're like 25, that's great. But not everybody's like that. But again, like talking about the La Maestra itself, I think it's a great opportunity for women conductors. But also at the same time, I agree that in 5 or 10 years, I hope we're not going to have a La Maestra anymore.
Because
while there are still very few music directors that are women or high position of conductors as women, we also need to see more equality. So I hope we're not shifting too much towards one side and then we have to balance it back. But I feel like I wish we just, in the next couple of years, it will be, you know, 50%, 50%, like it'll be really equity and like everything is balanced.
Coming back to the competition thing, so now kind of people are trying to recover from the pandemic, and there are many, many competitions coming back to being held in person. Do you have any like tips or things that helped you preparing for a competition? Because I know there are so many pieces that you need to prepare, kind of going through them, not knowing if you would advance to the next round. And there was also a new piece. How did you study and kind of manage your time?
That's a really interesting question. I can only answer that from my personal experience. And it's going to be different from everybody. First of all, the repertoire really represents some difficulties that the conductors need to handle. And I've done some of them. So I think for anyone who's doing the competition, knowing what your strengths and weaknesses, again, not trying to show what you can do, because I know some people see the repertoire and they're like, oh, this is hard. I'm going to do this one because then the jury will know it's hard. If you are not familiar with it, don't go with that one. Try something else that you're comfortable with, but because all the repertoire on the list is, the jury picked it for a reason. When I picked the Rossini for the last competition, for the opening round, I picked it because I love Rossini, first of all. I think it's so witty, it's so comical, it connects with my personality. I mean, maybe I'm not witty, but like, you know, it's just a little naughtiness that... In Rossini, in every Rossini overture, and I love showing that. I love showing the character and what you can do with it. So knowing your strengths and weaknesses, that's number one. Number two, just try to make music. Don't put so much pressure on yourself. You just there, make music with the musicians. One thing that I'm grateful for, the UK rehearsal system. In the UK, everything is very efficient. No 1 second was wasted. Like, because they don't have time. Like, if you see, like, London Symphony rehearsal schedule, 2 days maximum, and they have a concert. Rehearsal time is expensive.
So they have, just one or two rehearsal per concert? in that sense?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And how long is the rehearsal?
So I think when I was assisting, sometimes it's 3 hours a day. Sometimes it's two sessions, so 3 hours and two hours. Well, also depending on the program, but normal program, I think it's 2 days of rehearsals, and then they have a concert on the third day.
So it sometimes even happens that the orchestra hasn't played the entire program once, just only touch on spot. Is that right? As you say, like kind of efficient and.
No. I mean, they play the whole thing. I mean, but the orchestra is the similarity of UK and major orchestras in the US is the moment you rehearse them the first day is they know it already. They're ready to go.
I see.
Like for the concert, like it's the same in the major, but and then you touch up and then you do the musical thing, you know, it's very fast. So it's the same thing in the educational system. Well, I was in a junior fellow in conducting. So when we did when I did a contemporary rehearsal with a brand new orchestra, I only have, let's say the piece is 5-7 minutes for contemporary music. Mm-hmm. I only have 18 minutes to rehearse.
Yeah.
Because there's a couple of us, a couple conductors and a couple composers. So I have to do one run through, rehearse, and maybe do a touch up. And then I have a second rehearsal with the same amount of time or less, maybe. So that really prepares me for the competition as efficient as you can while still showing what you want. The last thing I would like to say is, and this is just me. I'm not French, so I probably won't conduct French repertoire in France, in Paris especially, with the French orchestra. So that's why I did not pick any of the French, like, you know, I didn't pick Debussy, or I picked like the Italian, German, like that's, I think that's more of my forte, so... It's a strategy. Like, I think it's a strategy. Like, for example, if you get invited to a major German orchestra, and you know, I'm young, like I will not bring Brahms or Beethoven. Like, I would bring something American or something completely different, like obscure symphonies that people don't play. And it's a smart strategy, I think. So
yeah, I think it's so true. I remember hearing Elaine Chen talking about her experience on stepping in and conduct the St. Petersburg Philharmonic on Russian repertoire, and she later said, okay, it probably wasn't the best move, because but she felt excited because she was asked to step in kind of last minute. But then, as right. you said, because when you are still kind of building your repertoire and kind of getting to know yourself as well, like picking a repertoire that the orchestra knows so much, and then maybe have so much tradition behind it that we might not be familiar with, could be risky in a competition setting.
Right, yeah, definitely. And you know, like people in Paris, I think they immerse with like French music so much. I don't think it's the best that if I pick Debussy, you know. It would be lovely to do Debussy with the French orchestra. But at that time, I'm like, this is a competition. I need to be more strategic to it.
That's really smart. So Rebecca talked about some things that from her experience, like first, know your weaknesses and your strengths. And second, just really focused on music making instead of winning the competition. And number three, she mentioned be very efficient in rehearsals. And the last one, be more strategic. Is you can choose the repertoire with the orchestra, kind of understand the background and the styles or the traditions with the orchestra will be helpful. So I kind of wanted to come back to like the first part you said, kind of understand your strengths and weaknesses. And I understand as we are learning and still kind of figuring things out, what are some indications that can help you understand what are your weaknesses and strength in general?
That's a very good question, actually. I mean, up until now, to be honest, we're still trying. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out like repertoires that are that really fits me well. Because it's still in the beginning of your career, like sometimes you don't have the chance to choose which repertoire. Like sometimes you get a gig, and they already have a set of repertoires.
Yeah,
but I had to turn down one or two engagements this season because I looked at the repertoire and they couldn't change it at all. And I saw it and I said, I'm not familiar with it at all. And I don't think I can be familiar with it in the short period of time, even though I have a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to remember that if it's because, for example, like one of the job that I have to turn down is lots of Wieniawski concertos, but they want to do the whole festival, the program around the violin program. So it's a lot of accompanying, but also the repertoires are not something I'm familiar with. And I've asked some different people that are conductors / violinist. They also don't know it. So I know it's a red flag for me. So I said, maybe next time, but not this time. So that's something like, sometimes it's hard to like say no for a gig because, you know, you want to do something, like you want to have the opportunity. But I still also remember Daniel Harding when he was interviewed and he said that one of the best career moves that he did was he turned down the Berlin Philharmonic in the beginning of his career. Because he wasn't familiar enough with the repertoire, or he needs to be more mature to do the repertoire. And he said that it's probably the best career move because if he did it, because, you know, the Berlin Phil could be very picky.
Yeah.
And they're a great orchestra and they're really, you know, they really want someone to be hands on deck. And if Daniel Harding turned down the Berlin Philharmonic, who are we to just accept, like, you know, as is, you know. Second, I know this from the beginning that I love a repertoire with a full energy, something with lots of energy, because I love that when the orchestra gives so much energy back that I feel like I'm immersed in this world of sound. Knowing the language of the music, I think it's important. Like, I love Russian repertoires. I mean, it's a strategic way probably not to bring it to Russia. But I realized that the last couple of years, I was doing a lot of Russian repertoire in Jakarta because I think it speaks to me a lot. There's something like with Russian music that the harmonization and the struggle with the composer sometimes really speaks to me. So I think knowing the language of what you love, like really love to do, meanwhile, you're also expanding, you know, your repertoire from A to Z, for example. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a really good strategy. So like if you love Russian music, you can work with an orchestra that might be a lot less familiar with the Russian language, musical language, than you. So you can also kind of use that to continue building your interpretation and your understanding with the music without kind of sacrificing career or other things to do it with them. Of course, like I would love to conduct Debussy one day with the French orchestra if they don't eat me alive. They probably would, but I'm just kind of imagining that sound coming from a French orchestra is just beautiful. It's just brilliant, but I have to be able to do that before I can say yes to any engagement. I'm not saying that I'm getting one now, but I totally agree that you say like kind of sometimes the quality of the engagement are more important than the quantity, that you want to do well and make sure you're accepting an invitation when you can really be the best of yourself, as opposed to I'm worried that if I turn it down now that they won't ask me back later and say yes to everything.
if you turn them down once, you know, I'm sure they can like invited you back, and then at that time, then you can discuss about the repertoire that you want. But like, you know, if you get 10 engagements and you turn down 8 of them, that's also not a good thing. But if you get like 20 engagements and you turn down 1, that's not so bad, because then I think the orchestra manager, I mean, the programming director knows that if they want you, then they'll invite you back. So that's not going to be a problem.
Yeah. And I wanted to jump back to the efficiency and rehearsals that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And you said that's something you learned in UK. And I know this is something that we don't always learn in our trainings, because a lot of times when we are students, we focus on kind of learning our techniques or learning the repertoire. Mm-hmm. We don't even really have time to learn how to rehearse or how to interact with ensembles in that sense. So could you share a little bit of like what are the things that would make you, or things that you can practice or focus on that will make you more efficient and effective in rehearsals?
That's a good point. I think one thing that this is something that I learned from Mark Gibson in Cincinnati, and in combination with what I learned in the UK from both Mark Heron and Clark Rundle. Mark Gibson always talks about laundry list. What is a laundry list? It's the list of things that you would like to rehearse even before the rehearsal starts. It's not that you would say them just because you want to say it to the orchestra, but it's just a list that you have in mind of maybe difficult passages of the musicality that you want, probably. But don't get me wrong, what he meant by the laundry list doesn't mean that when you go to the rehearsal and if they did it well, you said it anyway because the list is in front of you. And you should make, I mean, in your mind as a conductor, that when the things on the list change, then your rehearsal change. But at least you have something in your mind that you go through with it, that you're like, okay, this is probably difficult. We might need to go through this passage, you know, or the second passage, like the second list is probably like musicality, or something like that. But what I learned in the UK is really efficient in the language. What I meant by that is, so when I stopped, for example, when I stopped the orchestra, and I'm like, okay, first violin, this passage is about blah, blah, blah. I think we need to be like, that's already too long. So what they want in the UK is like, you stopped and you said the first violin, bar 56, softer, please.
Oh.
Much, much more efficient. But then they're like, okay, softer, you know. Just points, and you can talk a bit about musicality, but they're not going to be generous if you talk like 5 minutes about like what the music is about, because they know.
Mm-hmm.
They know what it's about. Like they're smart musicians. Like they're really smart. Like you don't go in and then you like start talking about like, you know, this background is about blah blah blah. You know? That's why when I talk about the Rossini, I don't talk about the opera.
Yeah,
I talk more about like what I feel like. It's like, oh, think about it as like a nagging child. This has to be really like nasal in the sound, and that's it. And they got it. Like I'm just portraying musical pictures for them.
That's really interesting. So you felt that they responded well with the French orchestra in competitions?
Well, that's becoming my style now, like the efficiency. But also, the less you talk, then the more that you show. And orchestra is there because they want to play. If they want to get lecture, they'll go back to school, you know, like or go to like a lecture hall. But they go to rehearsal and they're ready to play. In general, orchestras are there because they want to play and they want to be rehearsed and they want to do well in concert.
That is so true. And then I remember when I was at CCM studying with Mark Gibson, once we were complaining about the orchestra in our studio class, and someone says, oh, they just didn't like me. So they were not responding to what I was doing. And Mark said, that is not their job to like you.
That is so true.
And then he said, you know what? Orchestra members don't come in to rehearsal every day thinking that I hate conductors, I'm going to screw you. But they come to rehearsals thinking they want to make music. They want to play better by the end of the day. So your job is to help them play better by the end of the rehearsal and not to worry about making them like you.
That is so true. That's so Mark. That's really Mark. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I think my strategy going into the rehearsal is not because, oh, I hope they like me. That's like not the first thing in my mind, you know, because you're there to make music. They invite you for a reason. You're there to make music or whatever. If you're assigned an assignment to do a piece of opening or a symphony or a movement of a symphony, you're still there to make music with the musicians. Music should be the main goal, not like if I'm liked or why are they grumpy. Sometimes when you go to the orchestra and some of them are grumpy, all I can think about, maybe they have a bad day today, you know, maybe their tire is flat on the way to work, you know. It's not about you most of the time. Also a strategy. Don't take it too personal. If you do good work, then if they still don't like you, it's not your job to be liked. You know, I mean, of course, you still want to be nice in front of the orchestra. My last advice is be true to yourself. Be honest. Again, with the repertoire or with, you know, with your conducting, orchestra can see it if you're not honest with them. So I'm always honest with what I'm presenting. This is what I am. Mm-hmm. I'm not adding anything else. You know, I'm not trying to be strategic. I'm not trying to make the managing director happy just because so then they can invite me again. But when I'm in front of the orchestra, everything is about me and them making music. It's not about everything else. It's not about how much you get paid. It's not about, you know, what opportunities can I get after this? Everything is right there in the moment.
Yeah, it's also really hard because we want to please people in a sense. Like we want to make the orchestra happy. We want to make the management happy. Or if we're in master classes, we want to make the teacher happy. But as you say, it really, at the end of the day, it's only you and the music and the musicians there. And we're there to make music.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, it's really strange. I mean, the balance between the conductor and the orchestra, and I'm trying to find a good balance with it, but tyranny is not the answer. But also too many democracy is also not a good thing. So it's kind of weird, isn't it? Like it has to be in between because you don't want to be a tyrant, of course, but there should be some kind of a democracy. Like, for example, if the concertmaster said, like, oh, can I try this bowing instead? Mm-hmm. Of course, you know. I'm not going to say no to that. But then if they started arguing about, like, which musical passage, of course, as a conductor, you have to, like, this is what you want, mm-hmm. and this is what we're going to do. As long as it's within the music, of course.
Yeah, I almost feel like it's like a speed dating because you need to get to know someone really quickly.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's a good, it's you're not the only person who said that. It is like speed dating. It is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sometimes so awkward. Sometimes you click right away. Sometimes it's awkward. Yeah. Sometimes it gets better. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's very true. It's very true.
All right, Rebecca, thank you so much for all that you have shared. And I'll put that in the show notes, but can you please share with my listeners where they can find more about you, maybe your website or your social media handles that you're willing to be public?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Again, thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed this conversation, you know, and I hope the best for all the future young conductors and in the competition coming up, whether it's La Maestro or any other competition. And you can reach out to me through Facebook. I have Facebook, Rebecca Tong. And my IG, my Instagram is Rebecca Tong Conductor. And I have a website. It's just RebeccaTong.com. That's it. And thank you again, Chowen. It's been great.
So. Thank you so much.
This interview is actually the very first time that I spoke with Rebecca, even though we've known each other for years since we both went to CCM, short for the College Conservatory of Music at University of Cincinnati, and studied with Professor Mark Gibson for our master's degrees. And I wanted to take some time to talk about the program that I went through and my experiences. While Gibson and I had our differences and disagreements at times, I still learned a lot from him and from the program. Just this past November, when I conducted the Augusta Symphony, I found out that both clarinetists went to CCM as well. I overlapped with one of them, and the principal player finished before I started. But still, connections from attending the same school is always a good icebreaker. When I interviewed for my current position at Georgia Tech, my first phone interview when I was shortlisted was with the chair of the search committee, who also happens to be a CCM grad. And the conversation really hit off as we exchanged stories of our common teachers. But as we talked about in episode 8 with Talia Ilan, you really want to find a program and a teacher that are a good fit for you. Don't just go for something that is famous or prestigious when you cannot make the best out of it and fully benefit from your time there. When you are considering conducting programs, talk to a lot of people who have gone through it and visit and speak with the teacher if you can. Request to audit one of the conducting classes if your schedule allows, and go to the ensemble rehearsals so you can get a sense of the teacher as a conductor. Okay then, we've explored quite some topics so far in the first 10 episodes, from application material tips to managing your fear, from entrepreneurship to finding the right teacher, from programming for a social justice cause to diverse pathways to the podium. Do you have any topic that you would like to explore with me? I love to hear from you, and you can always DM me on social media. I'm at Ting Chowen on Instagram and at Chowen Ting Conductor on Facebook. If you post anything, don't forget to use the hashtag TheConductorsPodcast. You can also email me at TheConductorsPodcast@gmail.com. Just one word, TheConductorsPodcast. And don't forget, I'm hosting a monthly giveaway of an hour of free consultation with me. All you have to do is to leave a review of the podcast on why you love the show, share the screenshot of the review, and tag me on social media, and you'll be entered into the monthly giveaway for a free hour consultation. During the time with me, you'll have a chance to ask any question you have about conducting, score study, or the business. You can also get an extra entry every month as long as you share the podcast post and tag any friend. So go ahead and subscribe and leave a review if you have been enjoying listening. Next week, we will shift a bit and dive into the topic of including the composer in the rehearsal process when you are preparing for a performance of their works. My guest, Rachel Holly, will share stories and tips on maintaining a healthy and productive collaboration. And I will see you there at the same time and same place. Bye for now.